This is Audible.
Nudged Audiobooks presents The Last Chance Hotel, written by Nicky Thornton, narrated by Russell Bentley. Part 1, Chapter 1, The Last Chance Hotel. In the kitchen of the Last Chance Hotel, the loudest sound you were usually likely to hear was the gentle bubble of a lone egg coming to the boil. But today, the air was alive with yells from Henri Mould, the balding head chef, bent double with old age, barking out orders as he hobbled around the kitchen.
"Seth, those tarts, out of the oven, now," yelled Henri,
causing kitchen boy Seth to twist around on his spindly legs and hurtle to the other side of the kitchen. All around him, the air was filled with the smell of garlic butter and roasting meat, and cloudy with a dust of flour, herbs and spices. Steam ballooned, jelly set, and saucepans bubbled. If ever Seth Seppi wished he could be even the tiniest bit magic, it was now, because a spell to split himself into three was surely the only way he was going to get through all the tasks he'd been set by his three nasty bosses, Crotchety Henri and the two owners of the Last Chance Hotel, snappy and spiteful Norrie Bunn and her oily, penny-pinching husband, Horatio. It felt like the hotel had been preparing forever for these special guests that Mr. Bunn had been bouncing on his toes about, and today was the day they were due to arrive.
"I need more pepper. Quickly, boy,"
screeched Norrie Bunn from the stove, sending a long dribble of peppercorn sauce flying across the kitchen as she launched a dripping spoon in Seth's direction. Her long, brittle grey hair was tied back from her pointy face as she sweated over the sauce, trying not to sneeze. At least the Bunn's monstrously unpleasant daughter, Tiffany, was at her posh chef's school, far away from her favourite entertainment, tormenting Seth. Mr. Bunn burst into the kitchen, flapping his hands and squealing,
"They're here! They're here!"
like a small kid announcing Christmas, before rushing back out into the lobby. Even more startling, Mr. Bunn was wearing a cherry-red waistcoat and stripy trousers, rather than the familiar drab grey suit he had worn every day for years. Norrie Bunn tugged off her apron, and smoothing down her long grey hair, rushed to attend to her guests in the lobby. Seth managed to be the first to reach the crack in the kitchen wall, where it was possible to see through to the lobby and sneak a glimpse of the arriving guests. As he put his eye to the hole, he could hear the sound of keys being jangled and Mr. and Mrs. Bunn, on their best behaviour, greeting the new arrivals. Henri moved across the kitchen with unusual sprightliness, poked Seth out of the way with a very sharp elbow, and peered through the crack.
"Is that our VIP guest, Dr. Tholomyès? The one we've put in all this hard work for? Not very impressive, all this work."
Henri groaned as he pressed his paunch tenderly.
"Give me gas."
Seth had not expected their VIP guest to look like a miniature Father Christmas. Dr. Tholomyès had white hair, a round tummy, and eyes that twinkled, but he must have only come up to Seth's shoulder.
"And the chap with him. What a peacock!"
Henri continued his spying.
"Guess that's his security he's insisted on bringing with him. Security! Looks about as good at security as a chicken. What a ridiculous moustache!"
"That'll be Mr. Gregorian Kingfisher." Seth had glimpsed a young man in a bright green, tight-fitting suit, with well-combed dark brown hair, a very large and luxuriant brown moustache, and a sprinkle of freckles across his nose. "He's the one who's asked for a room with a picture of people playing sport." Guests often made special requests, but it was the first time anyone had been fussy about the artwork in their room. These guests were so fascinating. Seth had never known this many people staying. probably because outside the hotel the whole world was nothing but never-ending trees. Seth could just about remember the days when the Last Chance Hotel had always been full. That had been when his father had been chef here. In those days, people had relished the challenge of travelling to so remote a place just for the reward of trying his famous cooking. Seth longed for a summons from Mr. Bunn that someone needed help with their bags so he could get a closer look and see why Thelonious wanted Miss Square along as his assistant, growled Henri, turning his head and giving Seth a momentary chance to take another peek. Angelique Square's head was held as high as if she was making an entrance to a grand audience of thousands. Her hair was long, straight and dark, except for one long section of red down the right-hand side. It looked as if it had been polished. A film star? Under the twinkling chandelier, she made the clutter of well-polished wooden furniture and pictures in old frames seem faded and worn. "Back to work, Seth," snapped Omri, picking up a knife and heading to chop some vegetables, "or that washing up will reach the ceiling." But before Seth could make a start, Omri let out a cry, and the knife in his hand fell with a clatter to the cool flagstones of the kitchen floor. An insect flew past Seth's nose to batter against the window. Omri cowered. "It's just a bug, Omri," soothed Seth, gently teasing the little creature towards the open window. It looked like it was on fire, with a glowing phosphorescent tail. "That's not just any bug." Henri's eyes grew wide. "That's a luciole. Do you know what that means?"
"You mean it's a firefly? Must have got lost from the glowworm glade. It's beautiful. Come and take a look. They look like magic. Don't you think?"
"But it's inside," Henri hissed, dabbing his sweating upper lip. "In my country, if a lightning bug flies in the window, it means a death."
Henri gripped Seth's arm hard.
"Seth, someone is going to die."
Chapter 2. Fish Head Soup. Seth worked his arm out from Henri's frightened grip.
"That's just an old legend, Henri. Don't worry. No one is going to die."
He released the firefly to freedom, but Henri picked up his whittling knife and scuttled off in a panic. It was left to Seth to take over preparing the vegetables for tonight's feast. Whittling was what Henri did whenever he was stressed, and Seth was used to coming across a parsnip that had been turned into a striding giraffe or a piece of wood fashioned into a cute fox cub. But why did it always happen just when he really needed Omri to be making a roast chicken or a steak and kidney pudding that was needed for dinner? Seth scurried past the huge saucepan, where broth was bubbling, ready for the fish heads to be added to the hotel's signature fish head soup. The pile of fleshy fish heads Seth had prepared earlier were waiting, their eyes staring at him as though they were saying, "You think you've got it bad?" He skidded to a halt, his nose, taking in the aroma of stock and spices, was telling him something important. The broth wasn't quite right, and his nose was never wrong. Seth carefully lifted one of the fish heads for Nightshade, the hotel cat. He slipped it into one of the many pockets of the bright blue tunic he wore under his apron. It might be rather gaudy, but the tunic was almost the only thing left to him by his father. That and a mirror that was so useless, sometimes it looked as if it was reflecting what happened in an entirely different room. He took a tiny spoon, dipped it into the pan, and brought the liquid to his lips. It was wonderful and warming, and reminded him so much of his father, who was in danger of becoming little more than a distant memory. Seth could recall him. By a smell of cinnamon and spices and all those lessons, side by side, as they'd baked bread and made soup. He was left with his father being like a small glow of love inside of him, which was more memory than he had of his mother. Any thoughts of her made Seth's insides tighten from a sadness that she had died when he was just a baby, and he struggled to remember her at all. Seth reached up to the shelf, overcrowded with a mad jumble of bottles and jars of every imaginable shape, size, and color, took a pinch of some fine strands of dried yarrow, and sprinkled them in, thinking that although Mr. Bunn never tired of telling him how his father had been disgraced, he was never specific about exactly what he was supposed to have done. But Seth's father had come up with the recipe for the soup, and with such important guests, Seth was going to make sure it would be served up perfectly. Chef Henri Mould always skimped on ingredients and never got the hotel's famous dish quite right. So, with a stealthy glance over his shoulder, Seth reached for the saffron in its long, clear glass jar. His head swarmed with the repeated warnings from mean Mr. Bunn.
"Use it very sparingly. Gram for gram, saffron costs more than gold."
Seth took four tiny, delicate strands of saffron between his fingers, shot another fearful glance over his shoulder, and sprinkled them into the broth. He smiled as the soup turned a satisfying rich golden color.
"Well, well, well, Seppy, you're so going to pay for that."
Seth jumped, almost dropping the jar. There was no mistaking that hated voice, the last voice he had expected to hear today. Tiffany Bunn, the hotel owner's odious daughter, was leaning smugly against the kitchen doorframe. Chapter 3. It Might Be a Pudding.
"Seth Seppi, the saucepan scrubber, the worst kitchen boy in the world. Still here, I see."
Tiffany's voice oozed with contempt.
"Tiffany,"
Seth stammered, doing his best to sound casual as he tried to hide the jar of saffron behind his back.
You're back early. School okay?"
Tiffany Bunn slouched against one of the kitchen cupboards and tipped her head to one side.
"Oh, you missed me. Dad summoned me back to this miserable place at the end of the earth. He's a total pain when he's stressing. He thinks I'm going to help. But, oh, sweet, I didn't realize you counted the days just like I do."
She gave a flick of her gloriously long blonde hair, the hair of an angel. "I've really got to..."
"Oh, too busy to chat. And there's me just longing to see you after spending my days all whisk this and fry that."
She leant into him so close, her high forehead almost touched Seth's shoulder.
"Chef school has taught me one really important thing. There is nothing more tediously boring than cooking."
Seth's dearest wish was that one day his talent for cooking was going to be his way out of here. He longed to cook the sort of dishes that people would travel miles for, just like his father. When Henri was occupied whittling, Seth grabbed every chance he could to experiment, although sometimes, even in his dreams, he couldn't picture himself ever being anywhere else.
"Don't you want to know why coming back to this dump is bearable? Why I look forward to coming back?"
Tiffany whispered. Seth clutched the jar of saffron even tighter as she moved in so close. He could feel her breath on the side of his neck, smell her long journey on her skin in a cocktail of train dirt mixed with the sweet whiff of hot chocolate and a bacon sandwich.
"It's seeing you, my little saucepan scrubber. Still up to your elbows in potato peelings and dirty pots. Some things will never change.
Her blue eyes opened hypnotically wide. Her skin was so pearly white, her smile so dazzling, it was easy to miss Tiffany's real danger, that she concealed just the right amount of brains to make her absolutely lethal.
I long to come back, because it is such fun to see exactly what sort of trouble I can get you into.
She darted to grab Seth's arm from behind his back. She snatched the jar of saffron, twisting his arm painfully.
But you do make it so very easy for me, she purred. Stealing from the kitchens?
She laid a finger on the smooth skin of her cheek, and her lovely face curled into a malicious smile.
Now, what are we going to do about that?
Tiffany, I can...
Shame I can't take that out of your salary, Seppi, because you don't earn one, do you? We have to pay for all your food, because your miserable, good-for-nothing father disappeared and took some of my dad's most valuable possessions.
Seth hated the way he let her words claw at his insides, but he was stuck here. He had nowhere to go, no friends, no relations. Sometimes he thought he'd be here forever.
Dad is still sadly deluded into believing I have an interest in sweaty ovens and cookery books at that lame school. Do my parents even care that they are totally ruining my life?
Tiffany took out a piece of folded paper and shoved it into Seth's hand, flicking his forehead with her middle finger.
Still, I know you don't want to disappoint my dad.
What's this?
Asked Seth.
Something called a raspberry pavlova, said Tiffany, checking her elaborately painted nails.
Mr. Bunn delighted in challenging his daughter to come up with the most complicated dishes, and boasted about how well she made them and how much she was learning at her posh school. But it was always Seth she made do all the work. Seth tucked the piece of paper behind his ear.
Sure, I'll look at it later.
The clock was telling him there were less than 3 hours to go until the important dinner. He slid some tarts onto a rack to cool.
When do you need it? We're kind of busy, you know, Tiffany.
Tiffany raised her hands and stepped back.
Sorry, my bad.
Then she leant in and yanked the piece of paper out from behind his ear.
I'll look at it later,
she mimicked with a low chuckle.
Or how about you do it now?
Well, when do you need it?
Tiffany's next words were almost drowned out by the loud sizzle and splatter as he put the potatoes into the oven to roast.
It's for dinner tonight, obviously. I think it might be a pudding.
Seth stopped and stared at her, wide-eyed.
Oh, I can't possibly do it, she said. But let's hope you can, or else I shall be telling my dad about you pinching that saffron. And the fish heads, don't think I didn't notice that. Snacking on raw fish heads now, Seppi.
Tiffany tutted and shook her head.
Not a good sign. Or were you stealing it from that mangy cat you're so fond of?
Seth took a deep breath. Tiffany always, within seconds, made his insides feel like they were tightening into such a fierce ball. It made Seth picture making his hand into a fist and punching her right in the middle of those perfect teeth of hers. He swallowed it down. He smiled.
I only put the saffron in the soup to make it taste like it's supposed to. That's not stealing. Your dad wants to impress these guests.
Tiffany grabbed a handful of the tarts Seth had just rescued.
And if you're not careful, You'll be blamed for these going missing as well. Unless, of course, you'd like to help me with the, what's it called again?
The pavlova.
That's it. And if we say, Lemonhead, that if you manage to make the best pavlova the world has ever seen, then I might just be able to forget what I saw.
Seth hesitated, looking at Tiffany's evil smile, and they both knew he had no choice.
I might be able to, if you polish the candlesticks and lay the table.
Tiffany responded with one of Seth's most hated sounds, her awful barking laugh.
We both know that's not going to happen, saucepan scrubber.
She tossed a piece of pastry in the air and caught it neatly in her upturned mouth.
If you've got one or two things to do, I have a little word of friendly advice. Jolly well get a move on and don't hang around here yakking.
Chapter 4. Dr. Tholomyès himself. A call went up from the lobby.
More guests, Seth. Bags, quickly. Get a move on.
In response to Mr. Bunn's summons, Seth moved swiftly into the entrance lobby, where the crystal chandelier twinkled an inviting party atmosphere over the dark panelling. He only just stopped himself skidding on the floor he'd finished polishing at 5 that morning, and narrowly avoided colliding with an extraordinary-looking boy about his own age. The boy was dressed in a tight green velvet suit, and his oversized grin and enormous pointy ears seemed to be doing their best to make up for the rest of him being undersized.
"Steady,"
the boy said, flinging up his arms and spinning around on his surprisingly short legs, as if Seth had actually cannoned into him. Then his face cracked into a mischievous smile, and he gave Seth a cheeky wink.
"No harm done."
"Watch out, Seth!"
snapped Mr. Bunn, clicking his fingers.
"Master Dorinda Dunster Dunstable needs help with his luggage, not to be sent flying into next Christmas. And ask Count Married if he has a bag too."
As Seth bent to pick up two huge bags, he eyed the hooded figure that towered next to Dorinda, shrouded in a black travelling cloak that smelt of a long journey from a cold place. The traveller flung back the hood, revealing a dark domed head, the skin hatched with wrinkles like a raisin, and a monstrous scar running from the bottom of his bulbous nose to the corner of his lip, so it was lifted as if in a permanent sneer. It was much the same look as Tiffany achieved without needing the scar. Seth took a small, alarmed step backwards.
"Room 7, if you need me, young man,"
the cloaked count said cheerily to Dorinda, heading for the stairs, his smile revealing missing and blackened teeth. He ducked to avoid the low ceiling as he began to climb the stairs.
"Can't believe old Torpa Tholomyès himself is here. We've got catching up to do. Room 1, did you say?"
"Dr. Tholomyès himself is here,"
repeated the boy, his eyes widening.
"Really?"
The heavy wooden front door creaked as it slowly swung inwards, announcing another arrival. In strode an imposing woman who flapped towards them in a cloud of tropical perfume. She wore a huge tent-like dress of 100 different hues and took up more than her fair share of the hotel lobby. Her tower of blonde hair, streaked with colour, was piled so high on her head it almost scraped the low ceiling of the Last Chance Hotel.
"Professor Pappasbook, welcome," said Mr. Bunn,
bowing so low his nose almost touched the carpet, and Seth could see his trousers straining at the back.
"We are honoured to have a guest of your immense reputation."
A small girl emerged from behind the professor's voluminous skirts. She looked about 9, and, as if she'd arrived straight from school in a straight black skirt and cardigan, and a stiff white blouse buttoned to her neck. Professor Pappusbook shooed the girl out and pushed her forwards.
"Gloria Troutbeam, daughter of my oldest friend. I have always been proud of my connections to the great and glorious Troutbeams."
She gave a proud and wintry smile. Gloria could almost be trying to be the negative of her colourful companion. Straight, jet-black hair fell evenly either side of her face, which was the colour of last week's milk. She didn't even nod in greeting, just glared down at the faded red swirls of the worn carpet, glancing up just once and blinking her peculiar, colourless eyes. Dorinda Dunster Dunstable scampered towards the newcomers on his short little legs. He was only a head taller than Gloria. He gripped first hers, then Professor Pappusbook's hand with his surprisingly wide and strong fingers, which reminded Seth of chicken drumsticks.
"Dunster Dunstable, where have I heard your name?"
asked the Professor, rattling her fingers thoughtfully on her chin.
"Maybe you are more familiar with the great Gandolfini, my stage name."
The short boy made a poor attempt to sound modest.
"The talented young illusionist? That's you? No. Amazing. I keep saying how I must take Gloria to see your show."
Dorinda gave a bow.
"Let me know a date. I'd be chucked to bits if you'd let me get you the best seats in the house."
Mr. Bunn cleared his throat.
"Dear Professor, I expect you would welcome some refreshment after your journey."
He clicked his fingers at Seth, who was still trying to shoulder Dorinda Dunster Dunstable's heavy bags.
"And some help with your luggage."
Mr. Bunn disappeared through the door into the kitchen with a wave of his hands, leaving Seth to lead the way up the winding, uneven stairs, past a painting of a tiger, and reaching a portrait of a woman in a madly fruited hat on the first floor landing. Dunster Dunstable turned to Professor Pappusbook, while Seth fumbled with the keys to his room.
"Have you heard the news? Dr. Philomius is here. We will be showing our skills to the great man himself."
His face puckered in excitement, but Professor Pappusbook paled and her gaudy clothes appeared to shift, then resettle.
"Dr. Philomius is here?"
She folded her arms across her chest.
"Then I must tell him exactly what I think. Getting some of the very oldest and most noble families to go through this ridiculous procedure. Shameful!"
Seth puzzled over these words as he deposited Dorinda's bags in his room. What procedure was Professor Pappusbook referring to? Something to do with showing their skills to Dr. Philomius, whatever that meant. But if Pappusbook looked distressed about this, Dunster Dunstable's grin only grew wider, and he rubbed his hands.
"Sounds like this evening is going to be even more fun than I hoped."
Chapter 5. The Final Plump Raspberry. Back down in the kitchen, after settling the new arrivals into their rooms, Seth whipped up a froth of cream for the pavlova, amazed to think the important guests would get to try something he'd made all by himself, even though he knew Tiffany would get all the credit. When he placed the final plump raspberry on the swirled meringue creation, Seth knew the dessert looked absolutely stunning.
"You colossal idiot!"
came a voice from behind him. He hated the way she always sneaked up on him.
"You've used raspberries, dimwit!"
"They are kind of an important part of a raspberry pavlova."
"Not if this main guy, this Philomius, is allergic to them, you brainless wonder. You actually are even worse than your good-for-nothing dad, aren't you? I said strawberries. I said a strawberry pavlova. Are you trying to make me look the world's biggest piece of stupid?"
Had Tiffany deliberately mixed him up?
Seth knew she found nothing more fun than having him on the end of a hook. How she loved to see him dangle and squirm. But there was never any point in arguing with her. What was crucial was making sure their VIP guest would get a dessert he wasn't allergic to. But Seth was always cross with himself. It was drummed into him to always know the guest's special requirements, and he should have known his VIP guest was allergic to raspberries. He should have seen Tiffany's scheme coming, and he fumed inwardly.
"It wouldn't be good to have a guest die on us, Seppi, particularly if it looks like it's my fault," yelled Tiffany in his ear.
She made a sudden lunge, and Seth feared she would grab his wonderful creation and smash it to the ground, or worse, right in his face. He snatched the pavlova out of her reach and clasped it protectively, making the whipped cream wobble.
"Well, at least I haven't spent years at a school for chefs without even knowing what a pavlova is,"
Seth snapped back, the words out of his mouth before he could stop them. Tiffany's eyes narrowed with anger and malice. Seth took a deep breath. He had never spoken back to her before. There was a long moment while Seth tensed, felt the air charge and waited for the whiplash that was coming.
I'll do something else for Dr. Thelomius," he stammered quickly, before she could even speak. "Something just for him. Something really special," he promised,
carefully sliding the perfect pavlova inside the huge refrigerator and slamming the door before Tiffany could get her delicate, mean, milk-white hands on it.
"You'll do something outstanding," said Tiffany.
The jangle of a bell made them both look up. There was a line of old-fashioned bells above the kitchen door that connected to each of the bedrooms. If they rang, it meant someone wanted room service. Room 6. Gregorian Kingfisher was requesting room service. Seth nodded, eyes glued to that ringing bell, desperate to flee. Tiffany watched the bell chime again as she lolled against the refrigerator, giving a slow, wide pink yawn. Then her blue eyes snapped wide open.
"Hey, it could be your big chance, Seppi. Get your talent spotted. They might offer to take you away from all this. You'll be set on a road to fame and fortune."
"No, Tiffany," he paused in the doorway, "because you'll make sure you tell everyone you made it." She tilted her head to one side and gave a gloriously winning smile.
"Or this time I might tell them that it was really all you. All your work," she crooned. "What do you think?"
Seth looked into Tiffany's beautiful eyes and couldn't help feel a flash of hope. Just for a second, she had him believing her. Just for a second, he thought she was dangling a chance. Then her face creased up, and she barked out her hateful laugh.
"Oh, that is good. Believe that's going to happen, do you? Dream on, Seppi. I know you are not completely awful at cooking."
She prodded at a gravy stain, smeared on the apron over his blue tunic.
"But don't forget, you are just a washer of saucepans. Always will be. You'll never leave this place. Every time I come home, you will still be here in your rightful place, up to your elbows and potato peelings. You know you will. You'll never be like your dad."
Seth felt his insides tightening into a fierce ball again. He backed away slowly and made a dash for the stairs, Tiffany's barking laughter echoing in his ears. Only a brilliant recipe was going to keep Tiffany from tormenting him. And she would take all the credit, she always would. No wonder he could never see himself ever escaping from this place. Chapter 6. Herb Tea and Shortbread. As Seth reached the guest floor, Count Marid's face appeared from Dr. Tholomyès's room. As his eyes locked with Seth's, his face changed, the wrinkles in his face scrunching like paper.
We were wondering, any chance of a cup of tea and a jug of hot water for me and my good friend Dr. Tholomyès here, when you have a moment? No hurry at all.
Yes, of course, said Seth.
Seth finally reached Gregorian Kingfisher's room along the hall to answer the summons of the bell. He knocked twice, and getting no reply, stepped inside cautiously, wondering if he was too late. Then something immediately caught his attention. On the desk opposite the door was a mirror with the same dark glass and dark wood as the one his father had left him. Seth crossed to the desk and picked it up, thinking the mirror was his. The minute he held it in his hand, two things happened. He could tell right away that the mirror felt quite different to his own, even though, as he caught the reflection of his pale face and worried eyes, he felt the same strange sensation as he did whenever he looked into his own mirror, as if he wanted to dive right into the glass. And a voice behind him barked.
"What on earth are you doing?"
Seth turned clumsily, his elbow catching the corner of a mottled box made of a bumpy wood marked Moustache Care Kit. He only just stopped the neatly assembled combs and brushes tumbling onto the floor. Seth also dropped the mirror. Gregorian Kingfisher darted to catch it, and so did Seth, and they nearly crashed heads. Seth felt his face turn crimson, garbling that he was room service.
"Are you indeed? Well, a bit late," said Kingfisher acidly, looking at Seth as if he'd caught him stealing. "I sorted myself out. Just get out."
"Yes, sir. Of course, sir." Apologizing once again, Seth fled back down to the kitchen, not forgetting he had to fetch tea for room one, aware that the pile of washing up was forming into an impossible tower, and he still had to think of a new dessert for Dr. Tholomyès. He arrived, slightly breathless, at the door of room one a few minutes later.
"Tea and hot water, and shortbread, lemon and cinnamon. I hope you like it crumbly."
Seth crossed the room to the table, where the man with a disfigured face was silhouetted in a chair, teasing out something from a small orange pouch. There was a herbal smell in the room, and Seth smelt tea, green with a hint of grass. Dr. Tholomyès approached him with tiny steps, a kindly look in his eye, and an apology for Seth having to bring them something when he was so obviously busy. Placing the tea tray down, Seth caught sight of a yellow sheet of paper and couldn't stop himself sneaking a little look.
"You are cordially invited to the Last Chance Hotel to oversee a demonstration by the following candidates who have applied to go through the prospect selection procedure." A list of names followed. Dr. Tholomyès was at his side.
"Let me introduce my old friend Count Marid, my lad. What is your name?"
No guest in his whole life had ever been interested in his name before.
"Seth Seppi," he managed to reply.
Dr. Tholomyès seized him by the hand, as if delighted to meet him, and Seth thought the old gentleman must have made a mistake. He didn't like to explain that he was only the kitchen boy. The Count smiled widely.
"Who'd have thought my old friend Tholomyès would be here?" he chuckled. "Glad I decided to put myself through this infernal procedure the day you were in charge, old fella. Should make things easier."
"I am always completely fair," twinkled Tholomyès, shaking his head. "Even to you."
He reached to pat Count Marid on the shoulder, and leant against the wall, and Seth had the strangest sensation, almost as if the wall sighed as the old man touched it.
Dr. Philomius followed Seth to the door.
"Quite remote here, isn't it? Do you have family, Seth?"
Seth found himself smiling. "Just trees forever, really. Guess my parents must have liked trees."
"Liked? They're no longer around?"
"Not any more." Seth felt the choke in his voice as he said it. He didn't know exactly how long it had been since he'd last seen his father, but it had been so long that Seth had given up hope of ever seeing him again.
"Sorry to hear that," said Dr. Philomius,
and he pressed something into Seth's hand. Seth had discovered people didn't usually tip the kitchen boy, the boy who laid the tables and took out the rubbish and polished the candlesticks. If anyone left tips, they were normally grabbed by Mr. and Mrs. Bunn. But Dr. Philomius had given him a thick, heavy coin. Seth opened his mouth to protest, but Dr. Philomius closed Seth's hand over the gift.
"If I were you, I'd put that somewhere safe. Now off you go and get your work done. It's been an honor to meet you."
Seth swallowed, convinced Dr. Philomius was mixing him up with someone else. "What is your favorite food, sir? I mean, for a dessert, sir." It was all he could think of to say, because he really wanted to thank this wonderful old gentleman somehow.
"Apricots," said Dr. Philomius.
"Apricots," nodded Seth, his mind quickly beginning to whir through possible recipes.
"Come on, Philomius," said Count Marid in a gravelly voice. "Let's have this tea, catch up on old news. Then there's a game of four-handed brag being set up downstairs. I'd like to meet our fellow prospect contenders, see who I'm up against, and if at all possible, I should like to win some money off them first."
The mention of money made Seth feel for the coin in his pocket. It felt thick and heavy, and when he took it out to look at it, his heart gave a start to see the glint of yellow like it was real gold. But why would Dr. Philomius give him a gold coin? Surely it had been a mistake, but then the old man had been very insistent. All Seth knew was that no matter how little time he had left, and how many candlesticks needed polishing, he would find the time to make a dessert to bring a smile to the face of this old gentleman. Chapter 7 Grinning Woman in the Mad Hat. But first, finally, Seth was able to make it all the way to the top floor to feed his poor cat. He reached his room, relieved to rid himself of the incriminating stolen fish head, tossing it into Nightshade's bowl, which lay in the middle of the scrap of very worn carpet.
"Nightshade? Nightshade? Oh, you have no idea the trouble I got into getting that meal for you."
He moved past the narrow wardrobe that tilted to one side like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and sank onto his narrow bed. Its mattress was even lumpier than Henri's mashed potatoes. His black cat was curled asleep in the middle of his bed, melting into the dark, scratchy blanket, almost invisible in the gloom. He picked up his own mirror, which was still on the cardboard box he used as a bedside table. He saw his thin face looking back at him, wide eyes, untidy hair and pale skin above his bright blue tunic. Then his mirror did what it always did, and his reflection was replaced, this time by a vision of the painting of the grinning woman in the mad hat from the first floor landing. He put it down hurriedly. Nightshade stirred, stretched out her front paws, clawed at the bed covers and arched her back with a baleful look at Seth, grumpy that he'd woken her. Then she fell on the fish head hungrily.
"Talking of trouble, Nightshade, I need a recipe rather desperately. That pavlova is the best thing I've ever done," he sighed, taking out the gold coin and showing it to Nightshade. "But I need something even better for Dr. Philomius."
Seth dragged a hand through his hair.
I just don't seem to be able to come up with the perfect idea.
Nightshade gently padded over to him as he shifted on the thin mattress, making the springs protest. She leapt onto his lap and started digging her needle-sharp claws into his leg as if he were a cushion.
You watched Dad for years. What do you think, Nightshade? Ever seen him do anything brilliant with apricots? Got any bright ideas?
He tipped her onto the floor, and she started clawing at a small hole. She'd probably seen a spider.
You know, you're really in trouble when you start asking your cat for help.
Seth went across to one of the places in his room where the plaster near an ancient beam had started to crumble away. Here was a large hole that was great for hiding things. He reached in and took out a glass jar with a worn label that had once said Gilbert's Extra Strong Pickles, into which Seth had saved every penny of his meager tips over the years, and thoughtfully added the gold coin. Nightshade was still clawing.
What is it? A mouse? Or a spider?
She adored spiders. Sometimes he'd catch her looking gruesome with a couple of legs dangling out of her mouth. She wasn't stopping. In fact, she was scrabbling and clawing a sizable hole in the wall. Plaster was flying everywhere.
Nightshade, stop! Last thing I need is a load of mess to clear up.
She was covering herself in plaster. Despite the mess and the hole in the wall, Seth couldn't help laughing.
You don't look black anymore, you look grey. I'm going to have to change your name to Smoke.
But when he bent down to examine the mess, he wasn't laughing any more. Then Nightshade started to paw at the hole again.
No, Nightshade, enough!
He moved her roughly away, but she twisted from him and again stuck her paw deep in the hole and started clawing.
What is it? You're not after a mouse or a spider, are you?
Seth bent down and peered into the hole. There was something there. Seth reached in, feeling gently with the ends of his fingers, hoping it truly wasn't a mouse or a spider. He drew out what was hidden inside. He could see right away it was a book, a small black book, well used and so ancient he was afraid it might fall apart in his hands. As Seth lifted it, he could see its black cover had no markings, no lettering at all. But although it was old, someone had treasured it enough to bind it together by a thick scarlet thread. He was so stunned to suddenly find something so unusual, so old, and possibly very valuable in his drab and familiar room, that before he'd even thought about it, he found his fingers had unlaced the thread and opened the book. Chapter 8. The Strange Black Book. The book felt warm, as if it was giving off a glow, and it seemed almost to settle and mould itself to his touch like it belonged there. He perched on the end of his narrow bed, holding the book in his lap, and soon he was lost in thick pages full of jottings, doodles, pictures, and angry crossing outs. Seth was thrilled to see that the book was mostly full of recipes, unusual recipes. A recipe for quince posset, one for roast pigeon, swan with chestnut stuffing. If there was one thing Seth loved, it was new recipes, and he had never seen recipes like these before. The book was impossible to resist. Page after page of hints for making your own shoe polish and oven cleaner, alongside a recipe for Dundee cake or a drink crammed with lots of different herbs and berries marked, works well on dogs. Seth carried on leafing through the pages, desperately hoping to find something he could make for Dr. Thelomius. He paused to peer at a sketch of a birdcage, very similar to the tiny birdcage that hung from the ceiling in the room where Mr. Bunn secretly skulked with the newspaper most of the day. Only this birdcage seemed to be on fire, and beneath it was written, Firefly Cage. Nightshade slipped smoothly onto the bed beside him, and Seth reached out to stroke her fur. She still looked unlike her usual self, not being sootily black, but her green eyes stood out, looking at him with the wisdom of twin moons.
"It's like a gathering together of all sorts of homemade ideas for making stuff. Weird stuff, some of it."
He was staring at a description of a small mirror named Arunglas, for "if your way is secret." That was no good.
"It's not just recipes, Nightshade. Someone must have liked collecting and experimenting. A bit like me. But what I really need is something new and delicious with apricots. There was a section here somewhere called Family Favorites."
He flicked the pages back again, and there it was. Apricot Delice. Seth scanned the recipe. Simple, yet delicate. Perfect. Seth closed the book and breathed a sigh of relief. For once, it almost seemed as if things were on his side. Almost as if time had even slowed for him.
"Right, Nightshade, I need you. We have to be quick. We are on the hunt for apricots."
He turned to where Nightshade was busy cleaning the light covering of dust with her paws. She stopped, and her low silhouette slunk behind him without hesitation, moving as fluidly as a liquid shadow, as Seth headed down the stairs and out into the hotel's garden on his quest for apricots. The daylight was already disappearing fast. Time was running out. Chapter 9. An Accusing Finger. Seth slipped back in through the lobby, his tunic pockets bulging with apricots, listening out anxiously to see if he had been missed. But as he passed the hotel lounge, he was relieved to hear Horatio Bunn being jolly and offering drinks. Count Marid had said something about a game of cards, and it sounded like they were all getting to know each other. That meant no ringing bells. Even so, that dessert was literally going to have to be the work of a moment. First, Seth laid the long, gleaming table in the dining room, under a painting of two men sharing a meal of bread and cheese. He was almost out of time, and just hoped no one would notice he hadn't polished the candlesticks. Eight chairs waited in anticipation. The great ornate carved chair at the head of the table was where Dr. Tholomyès would sit. Seth set up heated trays so the food would be kept warm in the center of the table, as no one was allowed in to serve the guests. The meal was to be eaten in private, with only the guests present, behind closed doors. Mr. Bunn had drilled into his staff every small detail of what was requested for this secret feast, except telling anyone what the occasion was. Seth could not help but wonder about it as he moved a small table to just behind Dr. Tholomyès's chair that would be perfect for the apricot dessert, picturing the exact glass dish he would serve it in. He had caught that tiny glimpse of the paper in Dr. Tholomyès's room. Something about being invited for a demonstration. Candidates for something called the prospect selection procedure. What on earth was that? And why did everyone react so strongly to hearing Dr. Tholomyès was here? Who exactly was their VIP guest? Seth was just about to head back to the kitchen when he stopped and counted the places again. Dr. Tholomyès, Professor Pappersbook, Gloria Troutbean, Dorinda Dunster Dunstable, Angelique Square, Gregorian Kingfisher, Count Marid. There were only 7 guests, so why had he been told to lay the table for 8? Laughter drifted from the lounge, along with the chiming of the grandfather clock's musical striking of the hour, which reminded Seth it would soon be time to bring in the food from the kitchen, and he still had a dessert to do. Seth passed the lounge again, and peeked in to where Dr. Tholomyès Count Marid, Professor Pappersbook, and Dorinda Dunster Dunstable were squashed in around a low table in comfy chairs, playing cards, next to the fire Seth had laid earlier, which cast a lively, flickering glow on their laughing faces. Others were having drinks at the shiny chrome cocktail bar. The lounge was the coziest room in the hotel. No heavy wood panelling here. It was painted in a pale colour that reflected the light, with a modest fireplace in white marble. Even the paintings were cheerfully framed scenes of people partying and diving into swimming pools. Marid made a joke, and everyone burst into peals of laughter. Good. Everyone was occupied. When Seth arrived back at the kitchen, Henri greeted him angrily and pointed to the teetering pile of washing up, but Seth walked straight past him and told him he would do it after the dinner. He took a deep breath and propped up the mysterious black book in front of him on the counter. He followed the instructions exactly, separating eggs, then whisking the yolks, frothing them to a thick creaminess with a little lemon zest, then adding the flesh from the apricots, a sprinkle of cinnamon, and carefully dribbling in just the right amount of Marsala wine. In just 3 minutes, he spooned his dessert into an elegant stemmed dish. It was light and fluffy, smooth, and a buttery yellow like custard. He closed his eyes and hoped, as he took a nervous taste. It was as utterly perfect and as delicious as he had hoped. Seth felt a fluttering that told him with certainty that today was his day.
"Is this it?"
Tiffany was by his side, jolting him back to the present. She bestowed one of her most winning smiles that replaced just the vaguest hint of an anxious look that had crossed her face.
"For a moment I thought you were going to let me down, pot washer, and I really wouldn't be in your shoes if you ever risked anything so stupid."
Seth carried the dessert carefully through the kitchen. He had added a finishing touch of slices of plump, fresh apricot and placed the whole perfect confection ready in a bowl of ice to keep it at the correct temperature. He checked that the label, which read, "For the special delight of Dr. Tholomyès," was in place, and held his creation out to Tiffany as they arrived at the lobby, where Mr. and Mrs. Bunn were hovering anxiously. Kingfisher, Dr. Tholomyès and Count Marid were outside the dining room, and Professor Pappersbook, Gloria Troutbean, Angelique Square and Dunster Dunstable were watching from the stairs, waiting for the announcement that the food for the feast was ready. All eyes were on the exquisite dessert in Seth's hands as he tried to carefully hand it to Tiffany. Tiffany turned and gave one of her sugary simpers.
"Oh, Seth," she said in a pathetic voice, "as I slaved so hard on the dessert, perhaps you can do a little work and wouldn't mind placing it on the table."
He felt eyes boring into him as he walked into the dining room, past where Kingfisher was impatiently holding open the carved wooden door to where the rest of the feast lay ready.
"It seems that the feast will be starting a few minutes later than the appointed hour of 6:30, Kingfisher snapped as Seth flew past him. "The ritual is aimed at being both fair and understanding and allows for these sorts of blunders," continued Kingfisher, throwing Seth a withering glance that said in no uncertain terms that Seth had unwittingly managed to annoy the young man again. Kingfisher checked his watch in an impatient manner.
"So take this as your official 5-minute warning of the start of the feast. The door will now be locked, as part of strict procedures to prevent any last-minute tinkering or sabotage. The feast is held in secrecy, away from prying eyes. We know you would never want outsiders bustling in and out of the room," he said, as Seth scuttled back out of the room
just as Kingfisher started to close the door.
"We understand that some of you may be bringing